Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Thinking.
Here's John Williams.
Big voice. Thank you, David Jennings.
Do people do David Jennings for you, David Jennings?
No, they keep telling me I sound like Morgan Freeman or James Earl Jones, which I have a hard time hearing.
All of us sound like this around David Jennings. Well, it's time for my show. Here we go. I'm 17, and I can't wait until I get some hair. Thank you, David Jennings. Thank you, David Jennings.
You're welcome, John Williams.
It's 109. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. I believe Steve Bertrand will be joining us tomorrow. I'm not 100% sure about that, but it's good to have you in the saddle. And I think Ryan is going to take it at 1:30. So hello to you and to all of our friends. We are on until 3 o'clock this afternoon. I do a Saturday show from 10 a.m. until noon. Violetta Podramedic is in WGN traffic. Morning,
hi.
Violetta. Let's see, it's afternoon.
Good morning. Okay.
Good afternoon, whatever.
Thank you.
Did you watch the Oscars? Everybody's talking about the Oscars. And I just wanted to play back what I thought were some of the interesting things that happened last night at the Oscars. I also want to talk about the president's position on tariffs. Maybe he's changing his view about that. An economics professor will give us a tutorial that I think you and I will be able to understand. We'll do that on the show today. And we'll also talk a little bit about that gun show that they had at the DuPage County Fairgrounds and AR-15s. But first, let's talk a little bit about the Oscars. I think that that's not an easy job to do, to MC or host any of those things. When it goes well, when Billy Crystal, remember when he was doing it, is doing it so well and so effortlessly, it looks very easy. But then other times, David Letterman or somebody else will be up there and it doesn't go so well at all. Plus, I think the timing of any of these award shows these days puts a lot of pressure on the host because you've got to straddle the fun and the playfulness of an entertainment event with some very serious issues. And that is not easy. And Jimmy Kimmel's been doing that almost always successfully, but with some misfires on his show the last several months. So there he was emceeing the Oscars. And in fact, if you think about it, a lot of what his opening monologue was about last night was about things that have gone wrong. It's interesting. I think if you compare the topics and the jokes, stand by, a call is coming in. I do not have my phone on mute.
It must be Jimmy Kimmel.
Why, I was using my David Jennings voice, which is what I use when I need to say something more serious. Now back to the John Williams Show, already in progress. The topics, if you compare Jimmy Kimmel's monologue last night to, you know, when Johnny Carson did it or when other people have done it over the years, I bet that, and I didn't go back and listen to them all, but that they would have been about the stars in the movies and some social commentary and issues. But they didn't have to take on the Me Too. They didn't have to take on unequal pay and the seriousness of it, to say nothing of the Harvey Weinstein stuff, which they very specifically go after, right? By name, running down people who at last year's ceremony were the titans of the industry. So it's just a sort of funny thing because in a way, a lot of people in Hollywood and in that room have been complicit. A lot of them have been victims. A lot of them have been ignorant on the sidelines. And how do you make jokes about all of that? And I thought Kimmel did a really good job last night. But the first joke he had to tell was about another thing that's gone wrong. And that is that last year when they did the Best Picture presentation, they gave it to the wrong movie. So that was his first joke. Let's play soundbite number one. This is Jimmy Kimmel last night.
I do want to mention, this year, when you hear your name called, don't get up right away. Just give us a minute. We don't want another thing. Last year, about a week before the show, the producers asked me if I wanted to do some comedy with the accountants. And I said, no, I don't want to do comedy with the accountants. So then the accountants went ahead and did comedy on their own.
That's good. That's good. That's pretty good, Jimmy. But then he dives right into some of that sexual harassment and sexual assault stuff that Hollywood has been having to deal with. And I think it was Richard Roper who tweeted last night. He'll probably talk about this with Roe this week. But it was one of the he wonders if that was the first time the P word and a very specific P joke were used at the Oscars.
Oscar is the most beloved and respected man in Hollywood. And there's a very good reason why. Just look at him. Keeps his hands where you can see them. Never says a rude word. And most importantly, no penis at all. He is literally a statue of limitations. And that's the kind of men we need more of in this town.
That's pretty good. That's brilliant. A statue of limitations. And then he talked about the unequal pay issue with Williams and Wahlberg.
We all know the story. Mark Wahlberg was paid $1.5 million to reshoot his scenes, while Michelle Williams, for her reshoots, got per diem. She was paid $80 a day for the same thing. And what made it especially unfair is that Mark and Michelle are represented by the same agency. And I have to admit, this story really surprised me. This one shook me, because if we can't trust agents... Who can we trust?
Yeah.
To his credit, Mark Wahlberg announced he would be donating all $1.5 million to the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. So I guess now the ball's in your court, Michelle. What are you going to do with that 80 bucks?
All that controversy about a movie that really wasn't all that good and performances that weren't all that strong. He did say this about the casting of I, Tonya.
Whose kneecaps did Tonya Harding have to break to get this dream casting? Because, I mean, that was... If they made a movie about my life, best case scenario, I'd be played by Jim Belushi.
You notice, too, how many of your... I don't know how they decide who gets to be at the Oscars or sit in the good seats. I guess it's the people that are nominated, right? That makes sense. You want them there. But I always had in my mind that Jack Nicholson would always be there. That Matt Damon would always be there. That Leo DiCaprio would always be there. You know, pick the big Hollywood glamorous stars, that they would be there somehow too, just taking in the party. But they weren't. You don't get the cutaways to them or the reactions or whatever. And some of them make appearances either on stage as presenters or part of some... I don't know exactly how they decide who's there. But boy, if you made a list of the people that weren't there last night... You know, it's all, you know, say nothing of the Tom Cruises of the world, his ex-wife. I always wanted them to stay together. Tom Cruise isn't there, you know, and it was just kind of funny to me. Some of the stars and celebrities that you know and love don't go to the Oscars because I guess they're not nominated. It's that simple. But there were some interesting factoids that he dropped on us. This is cut number 5, Elif. Kimmel hit us with this at the Oscars.
Call Me By Your Name, which did not make a lot of money. In fact, of the 9 Best Picture nominees, only 2 of them made more than $100 million. But that's not the point. We don't make films like Call Me By Your Name for money. We make them to upset Mike Pence.
Ha, 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 ha.
Right?
Only 2 of them made $100 million, and some of them didn't make that much, you know, relative to all of the hype. Which is the way it is with Oscar movies sometimes. The next one is about the oldest actor nominated.
We have our oldest acting nominee ever. The magnificent Christopher Plummer is 88 years old. Chris, maybe this is not the place. There's something I want to be asking. How does Lin-Manuel Miranda compare to the real Alexander Hamilton?
That's good. That's good. That's funny. And how about this one? In fact, this one I found especially fascinating about Meryl Streep.
Meryl Streep is here with us. She earned her 21st Oscar nomination. Meryl's film career started in 1977. The longest she ever went without being nominated was from 1992 to 1995. And that's only because those were the years she was in prison. And that, I think, is amazing.
It makes you want to go back and look it up. So she started her career in 77, and this is 2018. So that's 30, 40, let's see, 87, 97, 07, 17. That's 41 years. And for only a 3 or 4 year span, she was not nominated? Hokey smokes! I mean, literally, LF, I'm not going to ask you to do this, but I mean, it does make you want to like get out the Google and confirm that the longest she's gone is maybe 92, 93, 94, 4 year span where she wasn't nominated for something. That's sensational. Of course, people are talking a lot about Frances McDormand's speech last night. I have two cuts to play for you from Frances McDormand last night. You know, as much as the hashtag MeToo movement, a lot of these awards shows are about empowerment of women, about getting their voices heard, about not putting up with the crap anymore. I think that when we have that conversation, we also need to find a way to talk to and about young men. And Frances McDormand did.
And I especially want to thank my clan, Joel and Pedro Mick Cohen. These two stalwart individuals were well raised by their feminist mothers. They value themselves, each other, and those around them.
I think that's a conversation that gets missed sometimes. We need to, if men are harassing women, women need to be strong, they need to know their rights, and we need to hear them. But we also need to start talking to men even more about behaving well. How are we raising young men? What is the culture doing to young men that makes them think that if they're lucky or opportunistic or fortunate enough or powerful enough, they get to do these things to women? Where is that conversation? And there she is. You know, I'm reading a little bit between the lines here, but I think that's the subtext of what she's talking about. That conversation needs to be had, too.
And then she had her trophy stolen.
She sat. I thought it was interesting because she sat it down on the ground and she said, and now for some perspective here. And I thought she was going to say something like, I'm not even a tall woman, but look how much bigger I am than this statue. And then say something about the meaning of the award versus us. You know, I thought she was going to do some literal play on the size of the statue and the size of people and what it all means. She wasn't doing that. She was just putting it down so she could go cuckoo. Because then she had all of the women stand up who are nominated for anything. And I think two things happened that were interesting here. She had to cajole everybody to buy into her bit, right? She wanted all of the women nominees to stand up. And she wasn't sure if they were going to do it, but she looked right at Meryl Streep and she said, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will. But then for about 30 or 40 seconds, she's working the room, working the room, working the room, knowing full well she's not going to win the jet skis, right? Hoping that it happens and the camera's panning the crowd and people are starting to stand up and it's working. She's having her moment. And as that happens, the second thing we learned is that she has a horsey laugh when she gets nervous. Did you notice that? It reminded me of Howard Dean at one of his speeches when he was running for president years ago. And the same way she was calling out all of the categories, he was calling out states. And then all of us were shocked to hear what became a very strange laugh or shriek. Maybe I'm the only person in America that is thinking that. Do you have the mashup of the two? Here's what it sounded like.
The actors, Meryl, if you do it, everybody else will. Come on. The filmmakers,
California,
the producers,
and New York,
the directors, the writers, the cinematographer, the composers, the songwriters, the designers,
South Dakota.
Come on. Ms. Voynet.
Right? Right? I'm right, aren't I? I'm right.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. I'm right.
And that was weird.
It was that moment all over again. Except in his case, it ruined his career. And in her case, it'll be, I think, one of the more memorable moments of Oscar history. That's going to somehow get played or parodied for a long time to come.
But it's just not a party anymore. Isn't the point about movies and not social justice and making a point about a woman's movement?
I agree. I agree. It's such a different animal.
And if the women didn't stand up in that segment,
yeah,
they would.
No, they had no choice.
People look at them funny.
I know. So they all had to stand up, and maybe it was a mutually shared happy moment. You know, maybe they didn't feel goaded,
or maybe they felt bullied by a feminist to be a feminist.
Listen to you. So maybe there was some of that, but you're absolutely right. The way to play that is you got to stand up and let's do it. Let's cooperate. Let's all have this moment. But the Oscars are so much different now. I think the pendulum's going to come back. Literally, it'll come back. I'll bet you next year it'll come back. But right now, all of these award shows are very statement-centric. And props to Jimmy Kimmel, because that was a fun night. He was very funny. And the only person I think can think of that could pull that off was him. Another thing people get upset about at the Oscars, and I'm a sucker for the In Memoriam segment. I love that. The fact that they do live music is really powerful to me, and it's always done really well. And then the images that come up, and we sit there and we just go, oh, yeah, right. Oh, hey, So you just kind of have these reflective little moments. But then that you can predict it. Every year, the next day, or that night, Twitter will blow up about somebody that got left off the list. And it is hard to believe that they left Adam West off. I mean, I know Batman was really a TV creature, but he was in movies and he should have been up there. I don't know why they make these mistakes. I don't know what the rule is for who gets in and who gets out, but Glenn Campbell could have been up there as well. He appeared in True Grit. He had a song that was nominated. Della Reese wasn't up there. There's a woman named Dorothy Malone who actually won an Oscar and did not make the In Memoriam. Powers Booth, Robert Guillaume, and others should have been up there and were not. And people are outraged.
Do you think that there's someone in charge of that as the year goes on? Like, okay, mark that one down, mark that one down. Or do you think all of a sudden in January it's a mad rush? Oh, gosh. Okay, who was it? Who do
Somebody's
we got?
Screaming out, Aleph, quick. I will look up everybody who's died.
Because I have to tell you, from a newsroom perspective, I'll kind of pull the curtain back a little bit. Sometimes we do, like, years in review, you know, and we do the best we can to rack our brain as to what happened.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, oh, we missed that.
I'm going to believe that there's somebody who, over the course of the year, has a job that is that, right? I mean, because you're a news guy who covers everything. If you're the Academy, you only have one job. That's to pay attention to Academy stuff, right?
Sure.
So I'll bet they pay more attention to it than you have the luxury of being able to pay attention to that sort of thing, Adam.
I wonder if it's people who haven't paid their SAG-AFTRA dues, too, you know?
That's what I was actually thinking. There's probably a thing, and every time somebody from SAG-AFTRA dies, bink, it gets a little notice. And if you're no longer in the union, literally this may be how it happens, then it gets missed. Maybe Adam West wasn't up on his dues. Amida Health knows you like no one else. They're the one that's there for you always. Lifelong bonds make all the difference. They're the ones that know what you need and when you need it. It's Amida Health. They include 9 hospitals, 7 immediate care centers, and 78 outpatient locations in the northwest, west, and southwest suburbs. Go to amidahealth.org/YOU or call 855-MY-AMIDA in sickness and in health. And after a 4-game road trip, the Hawks return to the United Center. They host Colorado. It's Blackhawks Avalanche Tuesday at 7 on WGN-TV and Radio 2. Ron wanted to jump here about the Oscars last night. Ron, you're on the air. What'd you want to say? Hi.
Hi, John.
Hey.
I have a criticism of Jimmy Kimmel's hosting. At the beginning of the show, he asked people to keep their acceptance speeches short, although he did it in a humorous way with the jet ski. Later on, I don't know at what point in the show it was, but he took a bunch of people across the street, and these people were supposed to be watching a preview of A Wrinkle in Time. And I thought, that's kind of hypocritical, because you're telling the people that win awards, don't go too long on your acceptance speech because it's a long show. So why did he do that thing, which I thought was ridiculous? That's taking time away from people that could be accepting speeches and giving longer speeches. And then after that, not exactly after that, it seemed like later in the show, the people got really shorter time to make their speech than the people earlier in the show, because I think they were trying to speed things along. So the people earlier in the show that got an award got loads of time, got plenty of time to make their point. But the people later in the show that won awards, is like they said like 3 sentences and they started playing the music.
I'm glad you called, Ron. I was having some of those same thoughts. We were live blogging about it last night, and some of us brought that up. I don't know why. Thanks for the call, Ron. I don't know why they worry about the time anyway. It's Sunday night. It's already late. Where's everybody got to be, right? I don't know if they have to end.
You got to get it back to your affiliate stations.
I guess so, but I don't know.
Those ABC network news reporters or the local news reporters are chopping at the bit.
That's it. So I really, because at the end of the day, they're going to come on and then do their evening news. And if they start at right at the top of the hour or bottom of the hour, or if they start at 12 after. For instance, at the very end then, when they pay off the jet ski bit by bringing out one of the winners with a life vest on the jet ski, I thought, okay, that's kind of funny shtick. But right after this lovely speech by the Best Picture winner, it seemed to me a little silly. I know it's just an entertainment show, but if you're going to talk about these big issues and award these wonderful movies, and then you do the kind of shtick that would work great on a late night TV show, I just thought that the payoff next to the winner looked a little clunky. I did something again today that I keep promising myself I'm not going to do.
What's that?
I went to Argo Tea again.
Oh, right down here.
Yeah. You know why I'm mad at them?
Yeah.
They don't take cash.
Oh, really?
They don't take cash.
Oh.
They will not take American money.
PayPal them or Bitcoin them or something? How does that work?
Yeah. They take Krugerrands. They actually take chunks of gold. They take debit cards, which is fine. It's quicker. I know that that's where the world is going in a way. Analog money is so 1984.
It's just so crazy because my dad's the complete opposite. He's like, cash. Cash is appreciated. Isn't cash king?
I would think
like a
so.
Business.
Yeah, I mean, don't they pay for each transaction on a debit
right.
card anyway? They lose money when you make a small purchase. Some stores would have signs saying, we will not take your debit card on a purchase under $25 or whatever.
Right, there's a minimum.
Yeah.
A minimum.
And I get that because they don't need to lose any money on an already small purchase. Cash is slow. So you got to make change. You got to hand it to me.
You have to actually count it.
I know.
36 and cents.
I know.
There's math involved.
The machines do the counting. My biggest complaint about it is that when they give you your change, they put the change in the receipt. So then you have to dislodge the coins from the paper underneath, and it can run you 10, 12, 15 seconds. So nobody's got that kind of time. So for some reason, Argo has now said they will not take your cash. And I recently looked at a dollar bill, and it says legal tender for all transactions or something like that.
Are you going to take this to the Supreme Court?
I know.
This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private.
Boom.
Boom. I should just
mic drop.
Drop an Alexander on him and walk out.
Highlight that part, though, because they're not going to read it.
I know.
They're going to put it in the tip jar and say, oh, that guy was nice.
It's not Alexander. It's Jackson. Okay,
you make a good point, though, about the tip jar. How are you supposed to tip these days?
I totally thought about that because I'm not writing a tip in. I'm always give them the extra coins, or at least the small ones. I keep the big coins, but the little ones I give them. Quarters for me, nickels and dimes for you. So that's the way. But, it all adds up over the course of a day. But I'm not going to write in 24 cents on my receipt. They must. If you work at one of those stores, aren't you losing money then on every transaction as a tip? I'm sure you are.
How much did your tea cost?
My coffee would have been $2 and about 40 cents, something like that.
I mean, I know they put love in it. I know that's the secret ingredient, but I'm sure they charge you on the back end.
I would do this if I was a place that was taking coins and dollar bills. I would try and make it so that the change would be large enough that the... Right? So if the bill was $3.15, you're giving 85 cents back. People might slide 85 cents in there. If the bill is... $2.85, and the change is only 15 cents, they might slide 15 cents in there. Which would you rather have, 85 cents in the tip jar or 15 cents? I would price the product to maximize the potential tip.
I just don't think that the business owner cares if their employee is making tip.
Evidently. And I'll bet the manager or Argo did not give everybody a raise to compensate them for the lost tips they're getting. And again, I'm not a barista, maybe you are, but over the course of a day, doesn't that add up? I mean, you're making minimum wage, but maybe it's another dollar or two an hour, I would guess, over the course of a day. And let me just read to you again what it says on my $20 bill. And yes, I know, I have a $20 bill.
Because no one will accept it.
I know. I may have this for the rest of my life. I don't know. This note is legal tender for all debts, public and private. No, it's not. Not here at Argoland. Argotonia. Margaret, you're on WGN. What did you want to say? Hi.
Yes, John. My experience has been just the opposite. When I pay cash, which I do for just about anything that when I go to the store, I'm out very quickly. The people I'm standing behind and other people standing behind me, when there are people with their credit and debit cards, they're standing there taking about 10 minutes to get through the line or longer because they're putting in all these cards, none of which seem to have either any money or not enough money, and they're punching in numbers, putting in cards. The person at the cashier is standing there. We're all waiting before the person finally gets finished with their transactions. So I get up there, I give them my money, they give me my change, and I'm out of my way in a few seconds.
Boom.
So these stores that want to do only cards, they're going to lose business. In fact, as principal, I wouldn't even go to them myself.
That's what it is. There's a Starbucks across the street. Well, that's no bargain either. Margaret, thank you for the call. I go to the Starbucks if I'm feeling like I deserve to treat me to something special rather than Argo. And it's on principle. It's stupid, and I'll probably lose the courage of my conviction here shortly. I'll probably be going to the Argo and using my debit card. But I would be interested to see somebody with a stopwatch time the average coffee purchase with cash and the average coffee purchase where do I scan it or do I do the chip? Do the chip hit the number, wait.
And then you have to wait for them to click something and they're talking to the bagging person. I'm like, hey,
let's focus here.
It's processing. I need you to hit that button so I can put my PIN in. Got to get out of here.
I bet you can make that purchase even before you get in line.
What are you talking about?
I bet you can have an account, right? I mean, doesn't Starbucks do that right now? Your credit card account, it's online. Boom. Your coffee's just waiting for you.
I think
no
that's
need for
how
a register.
Ro and Anna do their coffee purchase, yeah. Don't they, Violetta?
Yeah, that's pretty much it.
They pre-order theirs and walk over, and it's handed to them, which is amazing to me.
I got nostalgic last week. I took the kids to the grocery store, and I got stuck behind a woman who wrote a check out. She wrote a check, you know,
is
had to pull
allowed?
Out a driver's license. The place I went to, it was. And, you know, my kids are getting impatient. They're getting frustrated. I'm like, you know what? I had to do this all the time growing up, waiting for someone to write a check.
You're like, open the snack packs, have one.
It was kind of fun watching the woman write out in cursive very gently.
I know.
The name of the location.
And by the way,
signing
this,
her name.
I don't think a show goes by on any given day here at WGN Radio that some of us over the age of 40 don't take an opportunity to make fun of millennials. Here is that opportunity. Hmm. When writing a check, or for some reason, if you see a millennial signing their name,
I'm sweating. What?
You can marvel at how bad their penmanship is. Those of us who had to learn to write cursive and write every day and write letters to our boyfriends and girlfriends and sign checks, we've got signatures. They don't.
They've got emojis.
Well,
they've got these things. I go, oh my God, did you break your hand? What happened? No, that's how I sign.
It's because you're making us nervous, okay? We don't have a very sturdy hand when we do the cursive because we're breathing down our neck telling us that's not how you do a Z. That's, you know, come on.
Hey, Jack.
And you guys, hold on.
All
and
right.
You guys like when it's messy, your cursive. You're like, you're not supposed to be able to tell what it is. It's a signature. That's me.
There is a certain arrogance. Or
flair.
Flair. I know. It's like, well, look at me. Ha, ha, ha.
But anyway, continue.
Well, this text message from 630 literally says, hey, Jack, how about check writing? It registers today. My wife still writes checks.
I was behind her. That was the one woman I was behind.
You know, you should. All right. If you
grocery store in Palatine.
I don't know what the amount is, but if you are writing a check at Starbucks for a $2.40 coffee, you should be thrown out on principle. That's always been bad form. But if you're buying a suit, if you're buying groceries, I don't know what the price threshold is here, 50, 75 bucks, then go ahead and write a check.
I've probably only wrote 4 checks in my whole life. And then one of them was like a money order, too. Because I don't have a checkbook, so I go and get a money order.
I write checks so infrequently now. I'm like, oh, where's the checks? Where's the checks? The other day, I had to pay $2,500 to someone. It was a major bill that we had to address. So I got out a check. I found one, and I wrote it, and I dropped it off.
Did it feel good?
And it did. And then a few days later, they said, you don't have an account at this bank anymore. It was an old check from an old bank, and I didn't even notice. It said, "Oh, this is a check. Yeah, I'll write it." And I wrote it and gave it to him. And so now somebody has to pay $40 for a bank charge.
John Williams, gosh. Bouncing checks all over Chicago.
All over town. What are they paying him at GN over there?
Big radio host, big-time afternoon radio host.
Have $2,500 bucks to his name. Three employees at a Des Plaines daycare have been charged with endangering the life of a child. That story in 11 minutes. And your cash, credit, or check stories continue here on WGN. Speaking of financing and costs, Elif, where's the Dow? Where is the stock market now? Do you have that? She does not. Find that and let me know. It's 153. Let's pick up some phone lines. Jim, you're on the air. What did you want to say? Hi.
Hi, how you doing? Driving in Upper State Buffalo, near Buffalo, going through their toll system. I was short 15 cents. I had 15 pennies. I gave those to them. They wouldn't accept them. What they made me do was fill out a paper on IOU, took a picture of my driver's license, and said that I had to mail them the 15 cents. And I thought, how ludicrous. I said, this is the United States. This is American currency. They would not accept pennies. Then I get back here, and I don't know if you guys have heard about it or aware of it, but our toll system is going to go to a cash-free system. It's going to be a charge system.
In Illinois?
Cash. Yeah.
When is that going to happen?
I heard them talking about it, and they're slowly starting to change it. I don't know what the deadline is.
Yeah, there are fewer and fewer cash lanes than there used to be, that's for sure. But that's insane. You know, they should always have one or two lanes for cash. That's just as a courtesy. And I know it's expensive or a hassle. I don't care. That's not my problem. I'm on the road. If I don't have the transponder, I don't know. I'm from out of state. Whatever. My kid took it to put in their car. Whatever. You should be able to take cash. When I get
saying that that's supposed to be faster and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jim. When I get to be king and the paperwork's tied up at Cook County, but that will be allowed. Pennies. Are you kidding me? Yeah, you should be able to pay pennies. You should be able to pay pennies. Elif, where's the Dow now, brown cow?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 335.51 points at 24,873.57 points. The Dow Jones is up 1.37%, John.
Wonder if that's a reaction to the president seeming to, I'll say walk back. Maybe our guests will disagree, some of his thoughts about the tariff on aluminum and steel. We're talking to an economist in the next hour about NAFTA, and I had a conversation with this guy off the air, and I think he's pretty good on the air about helping you and I understand it. Jim, thanks for the phone call, and Bob, you're next. You're on WGN. Bob, what did you want to say? Hi.
Hello, John.
Hey.
Two things. A, if you're going to Jewel or Sears or wherever, you know you're going to write a check. Write in everything except the amount.
Yep.
Then when you get to the cash register, just go, okay, $97.28. Boom, I'm out of here. That's quick and painless.
I'm completely with you on that. Becky, you're on WGN. What do you want to say? Hi.
Hi. It was not so much about financials as I work somewhere where we have to mail out envelopes with bills in them. And the kids I work with in their 20s don't know how to fill out an envelope. They don't know that the address goes in the middle, that the stamp goes in the corner. They literally... I have to stop and go, what are you doing? They've got it down in the corner.
Hold on. All right, Violette, I'm going to give you 5 seconds. Ready? Go.
Your name, your address, but then your address goes a little under because you have to do Chicago, Illinois, zip code.
There it is.
And then your return in the corner.
Yep, upper left-hand corner, stamp in the upper right.
Yep, I got it.
We got one that knows, but I'm feeling your pain, Becky.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to. Here's John Williams.
I don't know what's going on today. It's 2:08. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We appreciate you tuning in. We're here until 3. Maybe sooner if I keep doing stuff like this. And then on Saturday, you can hear me from 10 a.m. until noon. And on social media, I'm WGN King John. WGN King John on social media if you're listening for us or looking for us there. You know, before the news, we were talking about the fact that it's frustrating to me that my local coffee shop now does not take cash anymore. It's pretty amazing to me that businesses can do that. A lot of you are calling, texting, writing. Some of you are actually putting stamps on envelopes and mailing us your thoughts about this. Violetta observed that her generation doesn't even know how to address an envelope. Actually, one of our listeners said that, and then
yeah, I did not bash my fellow millennials.
You defended by saying that you know exactly where the zip code goes and the stamp goes and stuff like that.
I still remember learning that in third grade.
Props to you.
And relearning it again when I was had to send my first check.
John Argo T is taking no cash because they don't trust their employees. There's no skimming if you're using debit cards. I have not heard that way.
That's a pretty big accusation.
I don't think that's true. I don't think that's why companies are doing this. John, I work at a grocery store in Roscoe, Illinois, which is 3 miles from the Wisconsin border. Everybody uses checks, but our computer system will fill them out for them if they just sign it. Oh, that's interesting. So you just give them the blank check with your signature, and it'll automatically put the information on there. Brr, 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 like that.
No data breach could ever happen there.
What could go wrong?
Just sign this. He'll be fine.
I know. Trust me. Trust me. I'm not doing that, Jack. John, the card is faster than the cash. Android or Apple Pay is fastest. Yeah, I get it. I know that this is old school, but I'm sorry. I missed the memo where American currency is not valued or valid in America. That's crazy.
I mean, even the Apple store, who's so technologically advanced, accepts cash. They don't like it. I walked in there, tried to buy something with cash, and they're like, ugh. But I have this little notepad here. Can't you just swipe? I'm like, no, I brought cash.
I want to pay cash. Yeah, maybe. And there's a lot of reasons for it. Here's one simple one, right? I already have the cash out of my account. I've subtracted it. I don't want to subtract more money from my account, and I will if I use my debit card.
Cash is right in front of you. It's cold, hard cash. You don't know if your card's going to go through necessarily, or you have to know, you know, your accounts and information and blah, blah, blah.
Plus, don't they say that you tend to spend less money when you use cash?
I don't know. For me, it just disappears.
This is the theory, that you have a better appreciation. If you have $5 $20 bills in your purse, when the $20 bills are gone, you know your money's gone. You've used $100. But if you're just tapping,
right,
you're not paying attention. It doesn't feel like money anymore.
A lot of budgeters tell you to take out the cash. You're going to spend $100 on groceries, take it out in cash. Plus, that way when you're there, you don't spend $140, you don't get the extra bottle of wine.
Once upon a time, didn't you ever do this? You'd get your paycheck and you'd put it in the bank, but then you'd keep some money back. That, and sometimes you'd keep the cash that you were going to have for the week. God, I didn't intend to sound this old, but this is what happened. And there was something pretty awesome about the feel of having $196 in cash in your hand. You know, that was your money. That was your mad money. That was your grocery money. That was your drinking money. This was what you were going to party with. It was fun to have that cash. It felt very tangible.
And you have to make it last.
Absolutely. And it felt very practical.
Because who's going to go to the bank again and use that crazy ATM machine?
I'll tell you what. I do all of this stuff, right? I got the debit card. We bank online, blah, blah, blah. But here's one thing that I know is a great convenience, but I'm still leery about. And that is taking a check that I have somehow acquired and depositing it into an ATM machine, just putting it in that little drawer, or not drawer, but the thing sucks it in, and then
never going to see it again.
You're never going to see that piece of paper again, and you'd better hope that that thing found your account. Somehow, magically, it's going to know to put that amount of money in your account.
A check is a little bit less scary, but putting cash into an ATM to take it, you're like, oh, that's shredded. It's gone. No one's going to believe me. I just inserted $500 into
exactly.
this ATM.
Exactly.
Have you taken a picture and deposited a check that way? Does your bank allow you to do that?
Well, my bank will actually give me a photocopy of the deposited check.
Receipt.
But you can actually, if I were to give you a check right now, and you could just snap a photo of it and deposit it that way.
And deposit what? The photo?
Yeah, the photo is the check.
So you can, instead of going to an ATM, John, you can take a picture of a check and put it in your app, and then it's deposited into your bank account. And the check
And then you can throw the check away or tear it up or whatever.
But then, Ryan, so that's money's going to be deleted from your account and put in mine, right? by virtue of my having taken a picture of the check you wrote to me, and then
it's
I
got my account number, it's got my routing number on it.
Holy smokes. Next thing you know, they're going to have cars that drive themselves.
This is like 2007 technology, though.
I know. That's what
we're going to be able to call each other on a telephone.
Was it City? I think that had an. It was actually a brilliant ad campaign. It was a young couple who had just been married. Like you can kind of see all the gifts behind them, and they had just received a bunch of checks, and they were headed off to their honeymoon, and they were just sitting there in bed taking pictures of all the checks they'd received for their wedding. I thought it was actually a pretty ingenious...
Yeah, that's a nice ad. Yeah. That's a good way to show the value of that.
They didn't have to go to the bank to deposit the checks before they went off on their honeymoon.
And here's the one thing that they don't also get to do. Interact with human beings. Have somebody say, oh, welcome to our place. Have a nice day. How are you? Oh, boy, how about those White Sox, huh? All of that is gone now.
That gives you more time to blog.
Wait, do you enjoy small talk like that?
Not a lot.
I hate small talk.
I know, but...
Oh, yeah, it's cold outside, yeah.
Small talk like that is medicine, and you should take it. You should do it. It's good for you. It forces you to make eye contact with another living soul and actually express thoughts to them.
But with someone you're never going to see again, why practice with those people when you can just do it with your circle?
I mean, maybe you do. I want to be this guy. But I'm just saying, I think there's some value that is lost when we automate everything.
I hear you. I just hate small talk.
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't know if that's because I'm a millennial or if I just don't understand small talk.
Yeah, maybe you're just not good at it. Maybe we should give you a primer.
Oh, I'm good at small talk.
Here, let's do it here. Hey, Violetta, how are you today?
Hey, I'm good. What about you?
Yeah, this is boring, isn't it?
So boring.
It's kind of cloudy out there.
Yeah.
I can't see, though, because you're in an office that doesn't have a window.
I think it's going to snow later.
Yeah, the thing is, I don't enjoy the part of the conversation where they go, what did you do this weekend? And then I stand there and I think, what did I do this weekend? And I'm inventorying what really was an uneventful 2 days. And then having to hopefully find that nugget of it that I want to share. You know what I mean? That whole dance? Yeah, I think I'll just stay in bed and take pictures of checks. Thank you, Violetta. Jim, you're on WGM. You wanted to say something about this. You're on the air. Hi.
How you doing? When you use your debit card at a lot of places, you don't realize it, but you're going to get a fee put on either by your bank or by the business itself.
Wait, I get the fee when I... Hold on. I get a fee when I do what?
When you use your debit card... to pay for groceries or ever.
How is that? No, you don't. What? Why do you say that?
You do. You used to be able to do it by debit card and not get a fee because they got charged their merchant fee. But then they turned, and I get charged $3 if I use my debit card at a grocery store.
No, you don't.
My bank.
Do you?
I do. My bank does. My bank charges me because of the fact that I'm
My wife does our banking. Hold on a second. Are you telling me that every time I use a debit card, I rack up a fee? I do not believe that, sir.
Depending on your bank and depending on where you go, yes.
Well, I'm going to look into this. Do you guys know that to be the case?
I don't think that it's for every transaction, but there is a monthly fee for what they call, you know,
convenience
banking,
fee convenience, or banking, yeah.
But it's very minimal at my bank.
Well, I hope, maybe I have enough money in the account that I don't have to pay that. You know, there's all different setups, but...
After all, you're bouncing checks all over the city.
That instant fee does
Jim,
add up,
thanks
though.
For the call. I appreciate it.
Those ATMs, when you've got to go and take out cash from an ATM that's not your bank, and then they ding you like $3.
But if you're taking cash out of an ATM at that place, it's because you really need that cash. So you're like, all right, fine, charge me $15 to take out
$30. But then my bank dings me for taking it out of there, so I get double walloped.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
No, tell your bank, you just tell them this is unacceptable, and they'll take it off.
I don't have that much clout.
You just have to, someone taught me, anytime you want something taken off, you just go, this is unacceptable, and don't say one word after that.
Hey, miss, I don't like small talk. How do you have that conversation? Do you go to person, or do you make a phone call?
I make a phone call, and I talk to a computer, and I just keep saying, speak to a manager, speak to a manager, speak, and then the computer's like, we can't understand you.
I know.
And I'm like, give me a human being now. So I can tell them this is unacceptable.
I used to write a lot of bad checks, and I would, I had the money, I didn't pay, I couldn't keep the balance in the register. I was always screwing it up. And I would go to the bank and I would just say, look, I know, and my bad. And they would go, oh, hi, John. You come in here every other week to deposit your check. We know you. We have a relationship with you. Okay. Well, I'll tell you what. Instead of a $10 fee, $5. Or we'll write it off this time. You know, I mean, see what happens when you learn to make small talk? It's 2:18. I want to pause for... Let's do this first, Elif. Ryan said that in an episode of West Wing... And we found the episode. You know how we were talking about when you can and can't use money, Ryan?
Mm-hmm.
That West Wing did an episode. They would talk about all sorts of current events. It was a great show for that. And you'd learn stuff, but then you were also nervous that what you were learning might not have been true. And they talked about tollways. And a guy called in a minute ago and said that it bugged him that you can't use pennies on the tollway.
Well, in what state was he? He said upstate New York, right?
He said Buffalo. I presume he meant New York, yeah. But they said, you said that in a West Wing episode, they talked about this, and they talked about Illinois' system, right, Ryan?
It was Allison, what's her name?
Janney?
Yeah, she just won an Oscar, yeah.
You look at the scenes in West Wing,
right?
And you see
CJ.
You see so many people who went on to great careers in film, or maybe they were already having great careers, but Toby not only has a cinema career, but is on other great TV shows, and... I'm just thinking of all of the people.
Rob Lowe was in that show for a little bit, wasn't
Absolutely.
He?
Okay, so they were talking about how, what was it, that some states do and some states don't, but Illinois was the only state that did allow pennies. Was that what you were telling me, Ryan?
Yep, Land of Lincoln.
So we found the episode, but I don't know that I have the audio from that yet. But if I find it, I'll look for it. But I love that show from that. By the way. What's the top movie ever in Illinois? What's the top movie ever in Illinois? By the way, they had the Gridiron Dinner Saturday night, the Gridiron Dinner. Ever since they've been doing the Gridiron, and I'll look it up here, I saw how many years this goes back. I think it's like 1888. Every single president has been invited, and all but one, I think it was Grover Cleveland. Yeah, here it is. I'm reading from Lynn Sweet's column in the Sun-Times today. President Trump was the closing speaker at the 133rd annual Gridiron Dinner, a fancy affair with men in white tie and tails and women in gowns. The Gridiron Club has invited every president to the dinner since 1885, and every president but Grover Cleveland has come to at least one. So Trump has made an appearance now. Saturday night, he was there in Washington, D.C. The First Lady was with him. His daughter, Ivanka, was there. Jared was there. Jeff Sessions was there. The Pences were there. There's two kinds of people in America. Those that would feel so honored to be at that table with them, and those who would say, just shoot me. That would be the worst night of my life, having to sit at that table. Now, we don't have audio of the president delivering his monologue or people cracking on him. It's the Gridiron, but there is a transcript of it. And at least one of the news services has turned the transcription into a computer voice. It literally will read anything to you. So we do have this from the president's speech Saturday night.
I offered Jeff Sessions a ride over, but he recused himself. We were late because Jared couldn't get through security. Ivanka, you've got to do something.
I wish I had the president's. I can't believe we don't have. I would love to compare one to the other and go, what's better? Because frankly, I've heard the Associated Press and other sources, you know, services use this service where they'll just read stuff to you that they don't have audio of. And I love it. Okay, so here is President Trump talking about Melania.
Who's going to be the next to leave? Steve Miller or Melania? That's terrible. But you love me, right, honey? By the way, she has been an incredible first lady. Melania is having a good time in the White House. She can finally claim me as an adult dependent.
By the way, did you see the video of the Trumps getting on Air Force One again over the weekend? So they get out of the black SUV. It pulls right up to the airplane. The president gets out on his side and just runs right up the steps. And he is in the plane. before Melania is around the backside of the SUV. I don't think they're getting along very well. It's 2:28. More jokes from the president after the news. We'll also talk to an economics professor at UIC about the president's tariff policy. We've been following, as have you, the president's plan to excise a 25% tax on imported aluminum and a 10% tax on steel. I believe 90% of the aluminum we use in this country is imported. So that will make the cost of anything with aluminum more expensive, beer cans to airplanes. It'll help the domestic aluminum industry because now they're more competitive. That's the idea. Some people are worried that it'll incite a trade war. The president says, I don't care. Trade wars are easy if you know how to do them. They're a good thing. Huh. Okay, I hope he's right about that. But then I was listening to the news, and it sounded like the president said he would either grant Mexico and Canada favored nation status on this, or he would actually forget about the trade war, the tariff, the tax on steel and aluminum, if he could get concessions for NAFTA. And at the same time, the market went back up. And I thought, I wonder if those things are tied together, or maybe the market is doing this for some other reason. Elif, where is the Dow now?
The Dow Jones Industrial Average is up 341.40 points at 24,879.46 points. The Dow Jones is up 1.39%, John.
But we close up, I'll bet we'll close up plus 300 today. Now, maybe those things aren't tied. I don't know. I do know this. Lawrence Officer is a professor of economics at the University of Illinois, Chicago. He's joined us before. Professor, welcome back to the show. How are you today?
Very well, John. Glad to be on it.
I'm trying to tie these two things together. What do you think of that?
I think you're right. The stock market reflects new information. It went down considerably over a short period of time because of Trump's announcement. And now people are saying, hey, maybe he's not so stupid. Maybe there won't be a trade war. Maybe NAFTA will come back better. Who knows? So the market seems to think, hey, maybe we overreacted to Trump.
Still, I can't find many people that think that the tariff is a good idea, except for steel and aluminum executives. Okay, fine, in the United States. And then a couple of advisors within the White House, but not all of them, including pretty much all of the Republican members of Congress, including Speaker Ryan. They're all terrified of this, and they're generally saying a tax plan like this is just bad policy. What do you say?
Yeah, for the country as a whole and for most people, it is bad policy. However, remember, Trump was elected to a large part by the disaffected people who have been hurt by trade and automation, and I think he's paying back his base.
You think this will help people in the steel and aluminum business?
Yes, but not those who use steel and aluminum, but those that produce it for sure.
Okay, well, wait a minute. Well, by the way, those are concentric circles. People who produce steel and aluminum also drink beer and drive cars. Do you expect that in theory anyway, Professor, won't the cost of beer and airplanes and automobiles go up that are made in the United States or whose materials are imported? Won't the cost of those things go up then?
Yes, but, you know, the people that seem to know tell us that it's automation that have lost jobs for American workers. Trade, not so much. Now, all of a sudden, these people are screaming, hey, don't impose tariffs on trade. Trade's the thing that counts. One wonders here. I guess I feel guilty because I'm an academic who pushes for free trade, and I guess I and others have forgotten those who are hurt by free trade or hurt by reduced taxes.
I'm sorry, what do you mean by that? How have you forgotten them?
Well, you know, we in the long run, there's no doubt that free trade is good for all countries. It's a win-win, and it's good for most people in our country. As you probably point out, we all use products that are made with imported goods. However, there are some domestic industries that are hurt, not just the CEOs, not just the executives, but the workers, too.
Yeah.
And these are people who voted for Trump, and he's paying them back.
Okay, fair enough. I mean, and even if the payback is not good for the gander, it's what he told these people he would do. You know, here's what I hear you saying, Professor. Tell me what you think of this, that when we say, okay, so steel and aluminum, those kinds of industries, those kind of old school industries in this country that don't have the sort of scale that they do in Asia, they can make a lot of things cheaper there. And so we say, okay, the people that used to make clothes or steel in America are just going to have to find new jobs. They're going to have to find new industries. And then we sort of take a sort of, well, good, we solve that problem attitude, when in fact, that's communities and lives that are affected and not easily repaired. I mean, it sucks for those people. And we sort of don't take that into account, do we?
I think that's true. We don't take it sufficiently into account, which is one of the reasons that President Trump got elected.
Okay, but in the long run, is a policy like this good for this country?
No, I don't think it's good, because it could lead to a trade war, as you've pointed out. And I don't believe that Trump really knows his economics, or rather that he's listening to the right advisors. I mean, actually, Trump is good on some points in economics. I think we could have higher growth. He was right with the tax cut. He was right to focus it on corporations from a growth standpoint. But this tariff is really paying back the base. I don't think this tariff is helping growth at all.
How realistic is this? So then you tell the people that were in textiles or steel, hey, listen, textiles and steel, we can't compete with China. They pay them pennies on the dollar, so we'll never be able to make it at the same price and the same quality. So you folks need to learn data entry. You need to learn computer skills. And we need to help them do that. I mean, that's really the resolution. It's not prop up textiles or steel. It's let's find better jobs for those people, right? More competitive.
You're 100% right. Most academics would agree with you on what you said. And we've done a poor job at retraining, subsidizing people, helping them out, those who are hurt, not just by trade, but also by automation.
There's a story in the paper today where they said, okay, so here's what happens. In order to protect the sugar beet growers and sugar cane growers in America, we put a tax on sugar that comes into Illinois. It's more expensive to bring in sugar. And you know what that? It was, I think, Neil Steinberg's story in the Sun-Times today. So what happens as a result? If you are making candy, or if you are a baker, like, say, Brock's Candy. Brock's Candy isn't here anymore. Why? Because sugar is so expensive to bring into Illinois and cook with. So they take that plant and they send it somewhere else. Now, we helped the sugar people. By golly, we made it more expensive to import sugar. But in the meantime, we've killed the candy and cookie industry in the state of Illinois. Comment on that.
I don't think we've killed the candy industry. I know personally someone who works in the candy industry. But, I mean, we certainly have made their inputs more expensive. Yeah, that's true. I'm agreeing with you. It is kind of foolhardy for the government to choose winners and losers. I mean, sugar is clearly not one of our primary agricultural products.
All right, so last...
This has been traditional. This is not Trump. This is going back years and years.
Yeah. Well, is there a history, though, of this working? I mean, what the president is proposing, is it possible this will be a good idea?
The United States is a big country. You know, we're the largest economy in the world. We're a very technologically advanced country. We can afford some inefficiencies to help out certain people. I just don't think it's the most efficient way of helping people. It would be better to have free trade, and some of the benefits of free trade should go to those workers and companies that are hurt
in cities,
by free trade.
Yeah. Professor of Economics at the University of Illinois at Chicago. Lawrence, I know you got to run. We do, too. I appreciate your time this afternoon.
It was a pleasure, John.
Lawrence Officer joining us again on WGN. But maybe the president isn't going to stick to it. Maybe he's going to vacillate a little bit here. Maybe he'll get the concessions he wants on NAFTA. The Dow up 340 points today. It's 246 on WGN. Oh, and the president was very funny, or was he, at the Gridiron Club. More audio from his jokes in a minute. By the way, doing the news at 3 o'clock here on WGN Radio. Are you doing the news at 3, Kim Gordon?
I am, and then Judy's doing the 3:30 from the SNL exhibit.
Violetta and Judy just trotted over with the rest of the Rokon and a DeVlantis team. They're at the SNL exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. We've all taken a turn over there. They're going to have a great show. And if you're in the neighborhood, you might want to swing by the Museum of Broadcast Communication downtown Chicago. It's over by Trump Tower and the House of Blues in that area. And visit the show and also visit the museum. Okay, so we'll wait for them in a few. By the way, Kim was one of our fellow movie bloggers last night.
So much fun.
We live blogged the Oscars. When we do this, all you have to do is go to WGNradio.com. I don't know if it sounds complicated. We say we're live blogging. Check it out. But that just means go to our website, and then you'll see a scroll of comments, links, pictures, fun things. It's a great way to watch something at the same time. So if we live blog the Super Bowl, there's additional videos that we'll throw on your computer, those, you know, bickering that takes place, and some agreeing that takes place as well. But it's like watching it with your friends, is at least what it felt like to
me. I loved it because nobody in my house cares, so I was watching it by myself, so I felt like I had other people to discuss it with. It was great.
The guys look good, too, by the way. Did you feel that the men got away from the traditional black tuxedo?
Well, that's what I put on the blog. I said tuxes, velvet tuxes by far, or all the tuxes, I thought were way better than some of the dresses this year.
And if you want to see what a Hollywood guy can look like, not that he's that, but there he was on Hollywood's biggest stage. Google Sufjan Stevens' Oscar outfit, because it was something to see.
That was something.
It was a dragon jacket. That's all I'll tell you.
Army Hammer looked pretty good, too, I have to say.
Yeah. Well, he always looks good, right?
Yeah, in that burgundy tux.
Was the problem with Armie Hammer, though, in the movie Call Me By Your Name, that he was playing a part for which he was a little too old? My problem with that movie wasn't that it was, you know, two guys, but it was that one was 17 and one looks about 35.
Right. I had several problems with the movie, but that was definitely one of them.
Okay, but if you have not watched Call Me By Your Name, and maybe this will be a good time to watch it because it's going to be kind of cold and miserable again. That movie is just the scenery, the weather, the food and wine. It's just so warm and rich and comforting,
yeah.
Right?
I had issues with the parents, but that's okay.
The parents who knew that the son at 17 was having an affair in their house and didn't seem to care?
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. But yeah, it was a very liberal movie that way, wasn't it?
Yeah.
My dad got mad if he found me making out with a girl in the basement, let alone a professor who's visiting from America is having an affair with your 17-year-old same-gender person all around Italy.
Well, that doesn't bother me. I feel like they kind of pegged this movie or, you know, categorized it as a gay movie, which I felt like it wasn't a gay
movie.
I thought it was about first love. It didn't matter, gay, straight,
and that's why
it doesn't
matter. Put it off. I didn't want to watch that kind of movie. And then I'm watching it, and for the first half of the movie, it's just a really rich, fun movie about this kid.
Yeah.
I got a little squishy the second half of the movie, I'll be honest with you, but it was a much better movie than I thought. What's the matter?
Do I need to go and see it now, or is it done?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, you go see the movie.
It's good.
It's
not great. It's good.
I thought it was
a little long.
I think you're right about that, too. Having heard this discussion, Elif, I think you would instill... There's still things about the movie you don't know. Trust me. It's
okay,
still
good.
A fine movie.
Because I was planning to go see it in theaters.
Here's the president at the Gridiron on Saturday night. So the Oscars are Sunday night. Saturday night it got buried, but they did the Oscars. And what do you know? The First Family and the Pences and the Sessions and Jared and Ivanka, they were all there to watch Donald Trump tell some jokes. There is no audio of it, but one of the news services has an audio transcription, so that's the best we got. This is the president cracking about the First Family.
Who's going to be the next to leave? Steve Miller or Melania? That's terrible. But you love me, right, honey? By the way, she has been an incredible first lady. Melania is having a good time in the White House. She can finally claim me as an adult dependent.
I can just imagine how painful that must have been for her. You know, we don't have video, we don't have audio. This is the president talking about CNN.
CNN has lost its very best reporter, Steve Bannon. That guy leaked more than the Titanic.
Does it help if after this one, LF, I'm going to play this. Tell me if this will help. No, not that. Not that. I have two options. After he makes a joke, I could play this. Or I could do... I'll try one of them. Okay, so this is the president talking about Mike Pence.
Lately, my apprentice Pence is showing a particularly keen interest in the news these days. He wakes up every morning and asks, has he been impeached yet? I don't like that.
I love that it ends with, I don't like that.
I don't like that. But I think that what happens is the I don't like that, or hey, but isn't she great? That's when the audience is laughing. And so then you go, hey, I don't like that. And that's you just adding a little layer of riff onto it. But that's the best I got for you today. Ro and Anna are right around the corner. They are at the Museum of Broadcast Communications and the Saturday Night Live exhibit. By the way, one other note that I just wanted to second about the Oscars. We're all having our turn with it today. I suppose Ro and Anna will talk a little bit about that as well. But I'll just read what Richard Roper said. Legendary actresses Eva Marie Saint, Rita Moreno, Jane Fonda killed in their respective moments on stage. Couldn't agree more. And oh my God, did the three of them look good. Rita Moreno looked terrific. Jane Fonda still does. Whatever that cost, money well spent. Helen Mirren was on stage, and she was on stage at one point, as I recall, with Jane Fonda, right? And I thought that she looked terrific, too, and not the same way that Jane does, and I don't think she's had the same extensive work that Jane did, but I just thought all of the ladies over a certain age that spoke or presented last night just looked and sounded and did great.
It was very classy, all of them.
Totally classy, very beautiful, very Hollywood. It was great to see.